Yeah, so I'll say that out loud. I never felt good about calling them gooks. And when I seen Vietnamese people, because even, you know, we were on LZs that were like quite far away from what we considered civilization. Mm-hmm. I mean, to them, it was probably everything was civilization. Mind you, there's only 17 million of them at the time. There's 83 million or more now. But nonetheless, here, you can use this if you want.
Oh, great.
I had occasion to meet civilians on you go outside the LZ and they'd be out there sell you anything. They had mm-hmm. cold watermelon if you wanted it. They had, you know, they were always there for you, you know. And so I took on a deal of just that they're people, and I was hoping that the people that were dealing with us, and as far as selling us cigarettes or selling us marijuana or selling us cold watermelon. I bought cold watermelon out in the middle of the jungle one day. I went to them because some guy told me, a vet told me, they'll get you anything. And I said, bullshit. And he goes, no, they'll get you anything. I said, okay, I'm going to go ask them for cold watermelon. So
sure enough,
about 4 hours later, I shows up with cold watermelon. So I looked at them as people, and in some cases I had, in one place that I was in Phuc Binh, we were allowed to go downtown quite a bit, and I had a girlfriend, and whenever I made friends with the Vietnamese, the civilians, wherever I was at, I would always tell them where I was on the LZ. I'm on the northwest corner of the LZ, so tonight do not bomb over there. Remember, you and I are friends. And they'd laugh, you know, but I was serious. It was like, I understand who you are or could be, and we'll do whatever we're doing right now as friends, or drinking beer together, or whatever we're doing, girlfriends, making love, whatever we're doing, but I live on the northwest side of the LZ. Please do not run your mortars on there tonight.
And clearly, you're still here, so it might have worked.
So I tried to make friends, you know. I tried another approach. So that's how I think I viewed the Vietnamese. One more little story about that, just to give you how serious I was about it. On an artillery piece, and you know this from the Vietnam thing, it was a body count. Mm-hmm. And that's what the whole war was based on. No, you're not allowed over there, kitty. No. The whole war was based on a body count. After being on the gun for about a month and a half, after every fire mission, you get a body count. After being on the gun for about a month and a half, I was the assistant gunner, which is second from the top. The gunner's the top, mm-hmm. and usually the section chief. I was the assistant gunner, and I refused to take the body count. My second lieutenant was appalled that I refused to take the body count. And he gave me the body count anyhow, and I told him that I wasn't going to tell the men. I wasn't going to tell the crew. And he was going to give me an Article 15, which is, you know, disciplinary action in the military, a slight disciplinary action. But I refused to take the body count. And my men stood behind that and told the lieutenant that we don't want the body count. We don't want it anymore. It's just let us do our job. We don't need the details.
Yeah, understandable.
So we were part of that revolution, if you call it, or whatever you might say. Not only was it happening at home, but it was happening in the forces also.
That's fascinating. I'd actually never heard that before. Can you think of any other instances like that of protest within the military during the war?
Well, that's the one that I brought to mind a little while ago about the 2nd and the 7th. Their captain, and I forget his name over the years, but he was the captain who played the North Vietnamese soldier in the movie Green Beret. Same guy. Anyhow, he was the captain of the 2nd and 7th at the time, and they had been out in the field for a number of days. And usually you have an LZ that you can be out for 3 days and come back, or be out for 4 days, be out for 2 days, 1 day, whatever. Mm-hmm. You always had this LZ that you'd go back on to defend. And they've been out for like 10 or 12 days. And they were on their way back. And he had said that they're not going to go back. They're going to go and do this one more mission. And the whole company, 120 men, sat down and refused to go. What had happened was, is the, and this is documented, what had happened was the radio men called in choppers to take them back, and they just defied the captain's orders. And choppers came in, the men boarded the choppers and went back to the LZ. That was the first real big defiance thing that happened on a major scale. And I think Walter Cronkite even talked about that particular incident. But it's a well-documented incident. So that's the only other one I know of. I know that a lot of the soldiers didn't want to, they were more in a defensive mode than an aggressive mode, you know? We were just trying to defend ourselves rather than be like Second World War heroes, you know? Yeah.
To go back to a question I was asking a while ago, the Vietnamese insurgents, the Viet Cong and the NVA, you said you saw them as gooks and whatever, but did you find there was any level of sort of grudging respect amongst enemies to them as well? I mean, as they were clearly a very tenacious opponent.
Yeah, well, I can give you a real good story about how tenacious they really are in my own experience, but I don't know if I crossed the boundary of respect or if I just was in wonderment. You know, if I was just like an un-fucking believable that these guys are that tenacious. It's just, it doesn't make sense. They don't have the equipment that I have personally, on me personally. I can match myself with any one of those soldiers. And they're totally outgunned, totally outmatched. And I was just in wonderment. I was just like, how in the hell are they doing this? They don't have the resupply. I mean, come on, being in the first Cav, we had ice cream every third day out in the field, guaranteed. Being in the first Cav, you had one hot a day, guaranteed. They didn't care where you were. You were an infantry guy who was out on outpost, you got one hot a day. You know, two C's and one hot. There wasn't any other unit in Vietnam getting that. These guys, the gooks, were eating fish heads and rice wrapped around their neck. They may have left North Vietnam 4 months, 5 months ago. They've been living like this. So there was this, if I guess it would cross the boundaries of respect, because you just couldn't fathom that they could continue the way they're continuing. Now, real quick on my story. On this one LZ, a hill in front of us, not a mountain, but a hill, they were dropping mortars on us all day. So they said, okay, here we go. What we're going to do is we're going to blast this hill. We're going to go in there and just, you know. So during the day, we had unloaded all of our ammo, plus had been resupplied and unloaded that ammo. Now that, for one gun, would amount to about maybe 70 rounds, 80 rounds. In the meantime, while we were getting resupplied by choppers, Phantoms were in, just shooting rockets and, you know, other artillery, 105 artillery going off at the same time. They were close enough, this mountain was close enough, that the infantry guys were lobbing 40 millimeters on them, mortars. It was just an all-up barrage on these guys, and that barrage lasted non-stop, probably 6.5 hours, non-stop. And so we all took a rest. Resupply was coming in. We were all going to take some lunch, have something to eat and everything. It wasn't within 15 minutes or 20 minutes after we stopped that we could hear them. Dum, dum, dum. Mortars right getting sent off right back at us. So, you know, at that point, you look at each other and go, what else can we do? I mean, we've given them everything that we can, that we have available to us, and they're firing back. So, to get back to, I guess, the respect, I mean, as a soldier, you got to respect that. You can't, you know, if that happens to you, you can't say, oh, fuck them, we'll get them next time. You're like, what the hell do we have to do here, you know? And sometimes you're like, you know, you're not feeling too good about this. Like a couple of guys on the gun are like, oh my God, these guys are going to overrun us tonight, you know? So then everybody starts thinking, well, tonight when it gets dark, we're going to have a real problem on our hands. These guys are going to come down like ants off of that hill and overrun us with satchel charges and God whatever. So everybody starts panicking about their tenacity. Mm-hmm. So they kept us. After all that, we think we intimidated them. Those three mortar rounds coming off after that intimidated us way more than we intimidated them.
So then I guess the second part of that question is, how did the South Vietnamese troops who were on your side compare to that?
The Arvins?
The Arvins, yeah.
Not much respect for the Arvins.
That's what I hear from most Vietnamese.
Yeah, the Arvins, I had seen a lot of Arvins, and I was on one firebase one time that had Arvins